And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
About 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on May 8th, 2016. It's the last hour of Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day, Lisa Wolf.
Thank you. I'm going to enjoy that last hour.
Happy Mother's Day to my mom, Rosalie, out there listening, and to all the moms out there. And we have another radio show to do.
We sure do.
We have the WGN Radio Theater do.
Show 76.
76, that's right. The Spirit of 76. And we have a tribute to Herbert Marshall, terrific actor. He starred in his own radio series called The Man Called X. We will hear him on that. Then Suspense. And also in a romantic drama called Screen Guild Theater. I don't have a romantic bone in my body.
No, I'm aware.
But that's okay. I still play some romances every once in a while. We're here till 2 o'clock in the morning. We're here every week on Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. And my team is Mike Costello, executive producer, Lisa Wolf, the woman with the biggest dimples. And Elif Garris is in the booth there. She's our producer. Hi, Elif. How are you?
Hi. Good evening. Happy Mother's Day, Lisa.
Thank you, Elif.
Yeah, four times over.
Yes.
You need a hobby.
I tell you.
All right.
I'm still looking.
All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress is attacked by a great white shark while surfing alone in the drama thriller The Shallows.
That could ruin your whole day.
That would be rough.
Yeah. All right. So this actress, if you can identify her, you will win
2 tickets to the Chicagoland premiere of Nice Work, if you can get it, playing at the Theater at the Center.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. You'll hear her starring in 2015's The Age of Adeline.
So, where are you off to?
Someplace with better food. My apartment. Yourself?
Now, this is an attractive woman. I would date her.
Yeah, you say that a whole lot of times.
Right.
A lot of women you would date.
312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break. All right, Chicago Knows Best, right, Lisa? Hit up Facebook and tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 p.m. on WGN-TV. Your pick may be Chicago's Best.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are back, and we're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip one more time.
So, where are you off to?
Someplace with better food. My apartment. Yourself?
You know what's funny? My apartment or my place never has better food than where I am. I don't know, somehow wherever
I go. What do you mean?
Wherever I go has better food than I make at home.
Okay, so you're not the world's greatest cook, but
no.
Look at how talented you are on the radio.
That's right.
You're
can't
a movie
everything.
Actress. You're a TV host. I mean, this girl does it all, right?
Oh
here.
Yeah, except for cook. I do have Mies meals.
That's
but
right.
We have Dave on the line. Let's talk to Dave. Hey, Dave.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm excellent.
Good. That was a tough question. Do you know who that celebrity's voice was?
Blake Lively.
You are right. Would you date her as well? I know Carl wants to date her. Are you on that bandwagon as well?
I'm a married man.
Oh, okay. But, we'll go with that.
You know.
We'll go with a no. But either way, you can take your wife and you can go see the premiere of Nice Work if you can get it. It's playing right now through June 5th at Theater at the Center. And I hope you enjoy the show. It's supposed to be terrific.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Great. You can
check
it out. Get more information at theateratthecenter.com.
You know, Blake Lively is married, so, you know, it worked out. I mean, he's married, she's married.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Blake is married to Ryan Reynolds. You wouldn't mind dating him if you were single, right, Lisa? Ryan Reynolds?
No comment, because like Mike, like Dave, I'm, you know, going to leave it at I'm married.
All right. Well, it's time for our first classic radio show. We're spotlighting a terrific actor, Herbert Marshall, and he starred in a series called The Man Called X. He was a secret agent on this show, Lisa. He was a debonair British actor, and he starred as FBI secret agent Ken Thurston. And our government dispatched him to dangerous locales all over the world to fight our enemies. Leon Belasco played Mr. X's assistant, Pagan Zeldschmidt. And it debuted over CBS in 1944, lasted till 1952. And in 1956, a syndicated series ran on television, 39 episodes starring Barry Sullivan as the man called X, Ken Thurston. But we have a radio episode for you now from July 13th, 1951. It's called Indonesia Oil. Here is Herbert Marshall in part one of The Man Called X.
Now we present Herbert Marshall as The Man Called X. Herbert Marshall as The Man Called X. Wherever there is mystery, intrigue, romance, in all the strange and dangerous places of the world, there you will find The Man Called X.
Under the blazing rays of the equatorial sun, a new nation has been born. The fledgling Republic of Indonesia. Proud and strong, the young nation faces its future with confidence and hope. A confidence and hope shared by the man who leaves the government building at Padang, Sumatra.
You're sure about that, Ken? There's no mistake?
Not a chance, Chief. I just got word of it here in Singapore. He was Jim Martin, all right.
Another American oil man. The third one killed in the Republic of Indonesia in the past 2 months.
That's right. And this time it was out-and-out murder. No accident.
What's going on there, Ken? Any ideas?
Chief, do you remember the Daryl Makeda?
Daryl Makeda? Oh, that World of Freedom outfit.
Yeah.
Sure. They were collaborationists during the war, working with the Japs.
Well, they're at it again, being very patriotic about it. They want all foreigners driven out of Indonesia. And they want all of her oil to be nationalized.
Oh, it begins to sound familiar, Ken. 10 years ago, to the Japs who wanted Asia for the Asiatics. Now?
Yeah. That nationalizing of oil gag makes a fine excuse to overthrow a government that's working with the Western democracies.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Isn't Jim Martin's company drilling test wells in undeveloped country in the north of Sumatra?
That's right. They're taking all the risk and only asking for a royalty if they manage to tap a new field. That's why the Daryl Makeda will do anything to stop those wells from coming in.
How do we keep him from getting away with it, Ken?
I've already got my tickets, Chief. For Padang, Sumatra. Looks like oil derrick rigging you're unloading.
I ain't sewing machine parts, Mac.
You must have grabbed Kelly.
What makes you think so?
They told me up at the office that I'd find you down here, loading equipment for the test well at Akeen.
Who are you, Mac?
My name's Ken Thurston.
That don't mean nothing to me. What's your racket? Come on, spill it.
I want to know what you can tell me about Jim Martin's murder.
Oh, I get it. A company snoop. But you better steer clear, Mac.
Why?
Because Brad Kelly's telling you to, that's why. This outfit's paying me to drill a test well up at Akeen. I got trouble enough without trying to play copper.
Sounds like you don't care who killed Martin.
All I care about is my job. The dough I'm going to get for bringing in a well, you savvy?
Sure. Just like if I was back in 39, isn't it, Kelly?
39?
Yep. The year the Russian oil fields at Baku were being modernized.
What does that mean?
They hired some outside help to do the job. One of them was an American oil super by the name of Brad Kelly, remember?
Are you Mr. Thurston?
Oh, here we go again.
Hello, Mr. Thurston.
All right, Pagon, how much do you want?
Exactly $163.29. How'd you know I wanted money?
What else?
Please, Mr. X, besides, you owe it to me.
I what?
Sure. It was pretty expensive for me to follow you here from Singapore, and I couldn't charter the airplane for peanuts, you understand?
What airplane?
Why, the one that's going to fly us to Mr. Kelly's oil well near Ahin, Natch.
You're Thurston, the man who wants me to fly him to the oil fields at Akin.
That's right, Miss Doran.
What's your reason for flying up there?
Do you always ask your passengers leading questions?
That's rugged country. The natives are pretty rugged, too. Traveling up there can be dangerous for a man.
But not for a woman, eh?
Thurston, I'll do almost anything to make a dollar.
What makes you think I wouldn't?
Might be a good answer for Zellschmidt, but not for the man called X.
Pagon didn't waste much time, did he, Frederica?
Talks pretty freely for $10.
Was it worth it to you?
Yes. I like to know all about the people I'm flying.
Just idle curiosity?
No. The Daryl Makeda.
What's their connection with you?
None, so far. That's the way I want to keep it. You're not satisfied?
Should I be?
You'd be a fool to fly with me if you weren't. Well?
Okay, Frederica, let's go.
Gentlemen, the Akin oil fields.
Hey, somebody beat us up here.
That red plane on the strip?
Sure. Belongs to that oil man who is the boss around here.
Brad Kelly?
That's the joker, yeah. Him and me are the oldest and dearest of friends.
No wonder it didn't cost him anything to learn that I was the man called X.
Are you kidding? It cost him exactly $10. Oh?
That's what I thought.
Looks like $10 is Pagan's standard fee for treason, Ken.
Treason? Now, what kind of talk is that? I was only trying to see that nothing happens to this oil well. I was only trying... Ken!
Yeah. Looks like you got here a little late, Pagan. It's already happened.
Look at it. Another 24-hour shutdown. And all because some lousy...
I believe you're forgetting something that is more important, Mr. Kelly.
Yes, Sunga? Like what?
The fact that three men were killed in the nitroglycerine explosion.
What the devil do I care how many lazy natives get their heads blown off? With their own blasted carelessness.
Was it, Mr. Kelly? Or was it the Darul Makeda?
Now look, Sunga, for the last time I'm telling you to knock off that guff about the Darul Makeda. I don't want to hear it anymore. You get me? Knock it off.
Why? You afraid there's some truth in it?
Thurston, what the devil are you doing here?
We didn't settle anything about Jim Martin's murder at our last meeting, Kelly.
Maybe that's the way I want it. And what I said before still goes. Stay clear of me.
The Rad Kelly's blowing off steam again, Singer.
So it would appear, Frederica. But someday he will not find his safety valve in words. And then will come the explosion. But we forget our manners. I do not believe this gentleman and I have met.
My name's Ken Thurston.
And I am Sunga Tabara, Mr. Thurston. Allow me to welcome you to Akin.
Thanks, Mr. Tabaran.
Sunga's an oil geologist, Ken.
Oh, working for Kelly?
The Indonesian government has assigned me to aid companies such as this in whatever way that I can.
Must be a pretty rugged assignment. What with Kelly and the explosion, the Darul Makeda.
Oh, you overheard that.
What makes you think they might be behind this nitro explosion?
It was so predicted, Mr. Thurston, by Negara.
Negara?
Yes. A girl who gives dance plays with Wayang. But perhaps you are not familiar with Wayang.
Yeah, they're puppets, aren't they? Used in shadow plays to tell stories about the past.
And about the future, Mr. Thurston. The more superstitious of my people believe that anything the puppets say will come true, even if my people themselves must help bring that truth to realization.
You mean they really believe that nonsense?
Negara's wayangs made two predictions at her shadow dance last night. Both came true today.
What were they, Sunga?
They said that smoke and fire would cover the great iron tower and stop its beating heart. A natural explosion.
And the other prediction?
That a great bird of the skies would land here today, carrying with it a devil god. A devil god who would be known by the symbol X.
That is definitely an organ, Lisa.
I didn't argue
with you.
I'm
pretty sure I can identify that as an organ.
I wouldn't argue with you, Carl.
On The Man Called X, is it on NBC? That's called Indonesia Oil with Herbert Marshall, part one of that. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. But first, these words on the WGN Radio Theater. Oh, yeah, I like this. What's this from?
I don't know. I just chose it.
I like it. I'm trying to think what it is. Now, I've heard this many, many times. It's like March of the something or other.
Yeah.
March of the Penguins or something?
Yeah, that's it.
Could it be?
No, I'm just thinking
if it is, I'm going to be really
do you hear the trumpets?
Proud of myself, but it's probably wrong because I'm usually wrong. Yeah, I'm usually wrong.
Last night or something?
March of the last night?
I don't know.
Well, I like it. I like it. All right, so it is 11:35. On a Sunday night, just want to remind all of our listeners, if this is the first time you've tuned us in, this is what we do here. We play classic radio shows, all your favorites, like The Shadow and Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, The Whistler, Inner Sanctum, Gunsmoke, Dragnet, Boston, Blackie, and if you're a fan of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, we have that because Mike Costello loves Johnny Dollar. And we play all of your favorites, and the best way to let us know what you out there in Radioland want to hear, just go to our Facebook page. Mike, tell everyone how they can do that.
They can just hop on the Facebook and type in WGN Radio Theater.
Nah, that's it?
Yeah,
and
that's
it. And we do spell it T-H-E-A-T-R-E, but you can put E-R if you want. We're not particular when it comes to that, right?
We're just not particular at all. We're just happy to have people come and visit us.
Yeah, so check us out on Facebook. Please like us. We also have a website for this show. It's WGNRadioTheater.com. And when you click through to the main website, you can download 10 of the best classic radio shows of all time, absolutely free to any listening device. And one of the shows is Abbott and Costello, including the Who's On First routine. And there's Gunsmoke and Dragnet, Suspense, and all kinds of fun stuff. So check out our website. And there's all kinds of shows available, digital download for purchase and also on CD. So fun stuff at WGNRadioTheater.com. But right now, let's get back to the conclusion now, July 13th, 1951, of Indonesia Oil, starring Herbert Marshall on The Man Called X.
Hey, I don't get it, Mr. X. What's all this yakety-yak about devil gods and dancers and Daryl Marquetas? What's all that got to do with drilling oil wells?
That's what we had to find out, Peg, huh?
But why monkey around with all this mishmash if you want to know who's throwing wrenches into the oil wells? Just ask me.
You've got it all figured out.
Sure. It's that Sunga Tabara.
Very interesting.
It's got to be him.
Why?
That's besides the point. Anyway, if it's not him, it's... Is that Kelly Joker? Or that gorgeous geranium Frederica? It's a cinch.
I don't know how I could ever get along without you, Pagan.
Thank you.
Oh, but someday I'd like to have a try. Here's our tent. Let's go in. Well.
Huh? What's so well about... Well.
Greeting, great one. I bid you welcome. In the name of the holy triad of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva.
Oh, thanks, baby. We,
You must be Nagara.
That is so, great one. High priestess of the Wayang. And you are the devil gods who have come to battle those whose selfish interests bring only destruction.
What makes you think we're here for that reason, Nagara?
It has been so predicted by the Wayangs, great one. And whatever is said by the Wayangs come to pass.
Have they told you who these selfish interests are?
it is to be told tonight. Let a shadow play in the jungle to the north. Be there, and you will see and hear for yourself. Until then, great one.
Sure, baby. Good. Goodbye. Boy, what a screwless character, hey, Mr. X?
I doubt it. But yeah, I was caught.
Hey, what do you know? It's a Charlie McCarthy.
It's a Wyang. A shadow puppet that tells the future.
It is? Hey, that things look like you.
That's right.
Then what is it doing with that... with that... Oh, Mr. X.
Yeah. The hilt of a dagger, Pagan. Sticking out of his chest.
Now, Act Two of The Man Called X, starring Herbert Marshall with Leon Belasco as Pagan Zellschmidt. X believes that the Daryl Merceda, a subversive organization, is planning to overthrow the Indonesian government under the smokescreen of a cry for nationalization of oil. He's in the wild northern country of Akin, where the success or failure of a test well being drilled by American interests might determine the success or failure of the Daryl Merceda's plans.
What kind of a sucker are you anyway, Sunga? There's no oil here. If you can sell Kelly on the idea of drilling further north on my land, we can all get rich.
I'm afraid, my dear Frederica, that the welfare of Indonesia is a bit more important in my estimation than your personal gain.
Okay, okay. Wave a flag if you want to. But nobody gets anything if you don't hit oil here, and you're not going to.
You sound pretty sure of that, Frederica.
I am sure. Kelly's drilled way below the limit of the other wells on Sumatra. And if that's not enough, ask Sunga what the test borings show.
What do they show?
Actually, very little upon which to base an opinion, Mr. Thurston. We must drill for many more weeks before anything definite can be known.
By that time, my options will be up. I've got to start drilling on that land before then, or I can't hold the leases.
Sounds like Sunga was right. You're more interested in making a dollar than in what happens to Indonesia.
Sure I am. Why not? Nobody gives you anything for nothing in this world.
Well, maybe we shouldn't expect it, Frederica.
All right, Ken. Preach your fancy little homilies. Let Sunga wave his flag. Won't do you or Indonesia any good. You'll never strike oil here.
I still want to know why you're so sure.
Two words, Ken. Daryl Merceda.
I don't get it, Mr. X. The oil well isn't working after the explosion, so why do we have to visit it at this time of night?
It's a perfect time for the Daryl Merceda to make a move.
Huh?
Easy now, we're almost there.
See? The joint's empty.
Any bets?
Where did that come from?
Somebody's working in the rigging.
Oh, that's crazy. What could anyone be doing out here in this dark?
They could be loosening the drill. So it'll fall down the bore.
They could?
It'd be weeks, maybe months of fishing for it before they could drill again. Plenty of time to start it and finish the revolution. Come on.
You die!
All right, Pagan, you can come out from behind that barrel now.
I was only going to... Boy, look at that knife in his hand. Oh, you shot him just in time.
I didn't shoot him.
You didn't? But...
Thanks, Nagara.
Nagara?
I had a presentiment that the Daryl Merceda might strike tonight.
Looks like you were right. Good going.
Hey, what gives with this cookie? She don't talk screwy like she did before.
I told you that was only an act, Pagan.
But she's the one who brought the puppets to the tent. The one dressed like you, with the knife stuck in him.
No, it was not I who brought the wiring there. I found it when I came to the tent to talk with you.
Huh?
It puzzled me because it's apparent we're both fighting the same enemy. The Daryl Merceda.
Then you know they're trying to destroy this well.
Of course. Just as they're attempting to destroy all Indonesia.
Huh?
We'll have to discuss it some other time. Your friends heard the shots.
Yes. When, Degara? Where?
I'll let you know. In the meantime, be on guard.
Boy, what a luscious lollipop, huh? And plenty handy with that gun.
I wonder.
Are you kidding? In that dark, with everybody moving, she picks off that guy with a knife just like that.
What if she missed Pagan?
Huh?
She might have been shooting at me.
I suppose you're waiting for me to thank you for last night, Thurston, huh?
The rig is operating again, Kelly. That satisfies me.
Good thing, too. I'd hate to hang for as long as it's going to take me to thank any stooge the company's put on my tail. Just stay out of my hair while I'm on this job.
Ungrateful cuss, isn't he?
Well.
He's not alone. You won't get any thanks from me either.
I didn't think so.
Oh, why not?
If that drill had fallen, the company might have given up this well. Then you'd have had a chance to sell them on drilling your property.
Why should I go to those lengths when I got an inside track?
Sunga Tabaran?
He made another test boring today. From the look on his face, it wasn't too encouraging. Is that right, Sunga?
Yes, what's right, Frederick?
The test boring, no good, was it?
No, I'm afraid that it was not.
No trace of oil-bearing sand or shale?
None, Mr. Thurston. I'm almost convinced I should recommend another site for a test well.
And little Frederica's got just the land for it, hasn't she, darling?
I hate to disappoint you, Frederica, but the answer is no.
What?
There is much more promising land, geologically, to the northeast of Akin.
What kind of dirty double-cross is that? After what you promised me.
I promise you nothing, Frederica.
Don't give me that. If there's another test well, it's going to be on my land.
Kind of a theoretical argument right now, isn't it, Frederica?
Not on your life. There's nothing theoretical about... Hey, wait a minute. What's going on at the well?
The drilling has stopped. That excitement.
Ken, that must mean that the...
That's right, Frederica. The well's come in. They've hit oil.
Something, Mr. Rex? I'm getting tired of wandering around this oil well in the middle of the night. Why are we wasting time here now?
Because Brad Kelly's not in his tent.
So what?
So I want to see what he's doing in the tool house.
Hey, that's right. There's a light burning inside there. I wonder what's cooking.
Let's go in and find out.
How do you like that? Joint's empty. Kelly's not here.
Take another look, Pagan. Behind the desk.
Behind the... Mr. X.
Yeah.
But who would want to bump off Kelly? That Daryl Marquette outfit?
Would you like to answer that, Sunga?
Sunga?
I do not mind, Mr. Thurston.
Hey, you're pointing the thing at me.
Tell me, how much did you learn during that telephone call you made?
Enough. You're not an official representative of the Indonesian Republic. And you've got your own leases on oil lands northeast of Akin.
A rather complete but hardly incriminating dossier.
I wonder if the Daryl Makeda would agree with you.
What do you mean?
You've been paid to stir up revolution in Indonesia. What you were really after was to steer the test well to your own property, to cash in both ways. I don't think your bosses would like that kind of double cross.
I'll spare you the trouble of telling them. By locking you in this tool house, when the burning oil from the well strikes it, you will be in no condition to talk to anyone.
Burning go on. But that well is not on fire.
You're quite true, Mr. Zellschmidt. But 15 seconds after I leave here, it will be. Good night, my friend.
Good night. Mr. Rex, he means it. We're going to burn in here, burn to little pieces. It's no good. We couldn't break down the door with a crowbar if we had a crowbar. Ooh.
Maybe we won't need one. Stand back. I think that did it. Come on, let's try it.
Huh? Try what?
The door, you idiot. I fired at the lock. Come on.
Mr. X, you did it. You saved me. That no good Sunga didn't get away with a thing.
Didn't he, Pagan?
given it to me straight, Zeltschmidt?
Sure. It's just like I told you, Miss Dorn. He shoved me away from the tool house and ran inside saying he still had work to do. Oh, poor Mr. X.
Poor Mr. X is right. That tool house is a cinder. It looks like your friend lost all the way around, including his life.
Well, don't say things like that.
There's no other way to say it. Look at those flames. They... See the fire?
Huh?
It's going out.
Huh? See? Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It is going out. Oh, it's gone. But what happened?
There's the answer, Zeltschmidt. Coming toward us in the fire suit. He's taking off the helmet now.
Huh? It's him. I'm Mr. Zeltschmidt.
So that's the reason he went back into the tool house. To get the suit and the carbon tet equipment.
You bet, yeah. Well, looks like we cleaned up another one, eh, Mr. X?
Not quite, Pagan.
Huh? But the world's okay again.
Yeah, but they're still Sungatabaran.
Oh, that's right.
I'm not so sure you had to worry about him, Ken.
What do you mean?
I ran into the native girl, Negara, just before this shindig started. She brought something for you. Here. Mean anything to you?
Hey, it's another one of those puppet things.
Yeah, a Wayang. Dressed just like Sunga was the last time we saw him.
That's right. It is. Could be his twin brother, except that it hasn't got a... Mr. X.
That's right, Pagan. It hasn't got a head.
Now, here is our star, Mr. Herbert Marshall.
Thanks for being with us. Join us, won't you, when next I return as The Man Called X. Good night.
There you have it, Lisa. The Man Called X, a good spy series starring Herbert Marshall, was on radio and TV. That one's called Indonesia Oil from July 13, 1951. Cast included Leon Belasco, and that was sustained over NBC. Sustaining means it didn't have a sponsor at that time. But I hope you enjoyed The Man Called X. We're spotlighting Herbert Marshall on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. Let's take a break, and then we'll be right back. All right, 12:06, hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. Happy Monday morning to you, Lisa. And we are here every single Saturday and Sunday into Monday with the WGN Radio Theater, playing all your favorite classic radio shows. These are radio broadcasts that were on the radio in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. And then, of course, television came and kind of wiped these shows out. And most of these radio programs made the transition to television. But people were like, wow, look at this newfangled device where I can see the pictures on this screen. At the first, it was like a little tiny screen. And then, of course, now you can get 60-inch television.
Oh, you can get a lot bigger than 60.
Well, whatever.
A nice 80-inch screen.
Yeah. But back then in the television was invented even way before the 1940s, but really television came into really existence where people were buying them in the 1940s, and then these shows started to make the transition. Some of the shows actually were on radio and television at the same time. Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, Red Skelton, they were on at the same time. But then what happened, it just became too much to do a radio show and a television show, so the radio shows kind of went bye-bye. Well, what we do here on the WGN Radio Theater is we have preserved these shows. We have the master recordings. We have over 100,000 shows, and we play them, six shows, every Saturday and Sunday night. So make sure you mark your calendar, hear all the best classic radio shows from the Golden Age on Saturdays and Sundays from 11 p.m. until 2 in the morning, right here on the legendary Radio 720 WGN. Now, in this hour, we're going to listen to Suspense with Herbert Marshall because we're saluting Herbert Marshall. And then in our third hour, between 1 a.m. and 2 a.m., we're going to tune into the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater presentation of Love Affair, starring Herbert Marshall along with Virginia Bruce. All of this is brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor is the voice of Marlin in the animated adventure Finding Dory.
Okay.
And if you call in and you are a winner, this is a double prize moment.
Double.
Double, you win a Lou Malnati's gift certificate and tickets to see Nice Work if you can get it, playing at Theater at the Center.
You're just in a good mood because it was Mother's Day yesterday.
I know, I got to sleep in.
You got a bunch of nice gifts,
that's
right?
I sure did.
So the number to call, 312-981-7200. If you can name this actor, he's one of my favorite actors. Now, here is this actor as star of 1991's Defending Your Life.
I was 10 years old. Television is everything to a 10-year-old. It's like heroin. You can't just pull it away.
All right. If you know who that is, give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We're back, and we're playing Celebrity Scoop, and let's hear that movie clip one more time.
I was 10 years old. Television is everything to a 10-year-old. It's like heroin. You can't just pull it away.
Hey, Matt.
Hi, it's Albert Brooks.
Yes, it certainly is. And you are a winner. Do you know what you won?
Lou Malnati.
Yeah, that's good stuff, right?
Yeah, it is.
We're going to give you a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's. Get a great pizza on us, and you can check out their menu at loumalnati's.com. And what goes better with a pizza than a play? You can go see the Chicago premiere of Nice Work if you can get it. It's playing right now through June 5th at Theater at the Center, and you can check that out at theateratthecenter.com. Hey, Matt, thanks so much for calling in, and we appreciate your listening.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Matt. Appreciate it. All right. So it is 12 minutes after midnight here on a Monday morning. Thanks for joining us here on the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa, it's always a pleasure to do the show with you. And you had a great Mother's Day yesterday.
I did. I feel like it's still Mother's Day, but I'm afraid it's not.
She got some Lululemon that she's going to return.
No.
Her husband gave her some Lululemon, right? Was it Lululemon?
I'm not going to tell you anymore because you're making me sound bad
on
the air.
No, I don't feel as bad because every time, Elle, if I buy Lisa things for her birthday and for Christmas and stuff like that.
That's once a year, just say.
No, I buy you stuff for your birthday.
My birthday's only once a year.
And Christmas. I buy you
twice a year.
Okay. And she returns everything I give her.
I buy you presents a lot.
I don't return them, though.
Well, she's allowed.
You know, Elle,
if it doesn't fit or if it's not right, why shouldn't you return it and get what's more flattering to your figure?
Yeah.
No, I think you should wear it no matter what.
No matter what.
It's the thought that counts. Sure,
I agree.
But
I'm appreciative of any gift. I like
I
like gifts in general.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just really happy with any gift.
Good.
I like water. I like pizza. I particularly like Lou Malnati's.
You like Lululemon.
I like Lululemon.
Yeah.
I'm wearing it right now.
So, all right. Well, I'm glad you had a nice Mother's Day.
Thank you. You can look forward to Father's Day.
I saw my mother yesterday on Mother's Day. It was great. I went to my sister's house and we ordered some pizza. Had a really fun time seeing my mom.
Yeah, it's nice to be with family.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we're going to tune in now to probably the best mystery series of all time. It came to radio in 1942, lasted till 1962, and it was billed as radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Suspenseful thrillers, biggest names in Hollywood appeared on it. All your big actors, Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart, Henry Fonda, Humphrey Bogart, Betty Davis, they all appeared on Suspense. And it went to television in 1949, although the television series just was not at the level of the radio series. So I think you're really going to enjoy this. Let's go back to a broadcast date of July 13th, 1944, a program starring Herbert Marshall called The Beast Must Die, part one now of Suspense.
Roma Wines present Suspense. Roma Wines, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Salute.
Your health, senor.
Roma Wines toast the world. The wine for your table is Roma Wine, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
The Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California.
welcomes you again to this weekly half hour of suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, Roma Wines bring you a star, Mr. Herbert Marshall. Mr. Marshall is with us to play in Nicholas Blake's powerful story of vengeance and retribution, The Beast Must Die. And now with The Beast Must Die, and with the performance of Herbert Marshall as Felix Lane, who wrote A Diary of Death, we again hope to keep you in suspense. I am going to kill a man. I don't know his name. I don't know where he lives. I have no idea what he looks like. But I'm going to find him and kill him.
Well, Mr. Lane?
I wrote those words, if that's what you're asking, Inspector. And I meant them.
Apparently you did. Whatever possessed you to write such a document?
Vanity, for one thing, I suppose. A record for posterity of the perfect crime. As you know, I'm a writer by profession. I think more clearly on paper. By keeping this diary, I was able to plan my murder step by step. Details, little things that happened in the course of a day which might so easily have been forgotten or overlooked, were written down in this diary, where I could refer back to them and make use of them if need be.
But you found out that a real-life murder could not be carried out so easily as the murders you wrote about in your detective novels, eh, Mr. Lane?
I wouldn't go so far as to say that, Inspector. In fact, except for the ending, I think this diary is quite the best murder story I've ever written.
Yeah, and quite the most incriminating document I've ever known a prospective murderer to leave lying around.
Incriminating? In a way, I suppose. In another way, this diary might turn out to be my best defense.
How do you figure that, Mr. Lane?
Well, supposing I read some parts of it aloud to you and let you decide for yourself.
Very well, Mr. Lane. Fire away.
That was my first entry. June 18th. Yes, I'm going to kill a man. It takes great singleness of purpose to commit a murder. But if ever for a moment I stray from that purpose, I've only to think of Ronnie. Ronnie was my son. One evening, 2 weeks ago, he was crossing the road outside our house. He had gone into the village to buy some candy. For him, it could have been only a paralyzing blaze of headlights around the corner, a moment's nightmare, and then the impact turning everything to darkness forever. His body was hurled into the ditch. He was dead at once. The motorist who killed Ronnie did not stop. The police have failed to trace him. They say he must have been going 50 around that blind corner from a child's body to have been thrown and injured as it was. The man who drove that car, he is the man I have got to find and kill. June 25th. I found my first clue today. My mind was on Ronnie. I was driving toward a neighboring town. The hills around were green. The boxwood hedges, still damp from last night's rain, translucent like giant chunks of emerald. Suddenly, the front wheels of my car hit into a great puddle. A sheet of water splashed up over the front of the windshield and drenched me from the side. I pulled up at the far side of the water splash. I got out, cursing myself for my preoccupation, and began mopping away at the windshield. A man leaning over a farm gate addressed me.
Whoa! Looks like you got a proper shower bath, mister.
Yes.
Been pestering the county for months to repair that hole. People always driving into it, splashing themselves all over. Funny thing of all, though, was about a fortnight ago when a chap tried to use it to get a free car wash.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was my wife's birthday, to be exact. About 8 o'clock, we was on our way to Cheltenham to see the picture show. Just coming out of the gate, this chap driving one of those low slung sports jobs hits the water splash.
You don't say.
Ah. And then the fella says something to the girl he's driving with. What do you suppose they do? They back up and run through the splash again. And then again. They did it 4 times.
8 o'clock. Your wife's birthday, it wouldn't be June 3rd, would it?
Oh, right, yeah. But how'd you know?
Oh, well, you see, a friend of mine was celebrating that night. He was driving toward,
Severnbury. That's where this fella and his lady friend were going. I remember his lady friend says, George, ask the man whether you turn to the right or to the left at the next fork.
George?
George, yes, that's right. That's my pal's name. And, Sevenbridge, yes. Yes. And the way he drives ought to have brought him here by just around 8 o'clock. He didn't have a crumpled right front fender, did he?
Oh, that he did. And that bloke was your friend. He sure is a proper nut. Well, peculiar, at least.
Yes. Yes, he is peculiar.
Driving through that water splash all over again and again. 4 times he does it. He wasn't laughing either. Didn't seem like a joke somehow. Looks like he's trying to get a free car wash. Funny way, I'd say, to get the mud off.
Yes, yes.
Maybe it was tar, though.
Yes. Or blood. July 12th. At Sevenbridge, have talked to any number of the town's people, and I've met a number of Georges. But not one of them have owned or driven a low-slung sports job. Not like the one I've been looking for, anyway. It may be that I have to start all over again on some other tack. I was returning to the inn this afternoon when I noticed a car parked on the side of the road up ahead. A girl with bright hair was working at the rear wheel, and a small lad beside her was doing his best to help. I pulled up beside them. It was a long, low, slung sport job. I say, can I help?
Well, what do you think, Phil?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, if you would lend a hand. I'm afraid we're not quite heavy enough to weight the jack handle down for another turn.
Now, here, fella, let me have a go at it. I say, the paint doesn't seem quite to match on the right front fender.
The fender? Oh, Dad had a new fender put on a while back. It got bunged up or something.
I can't tell you how awfully nice it is of you to help us out.
Not at all. By the way, I wonder if you and Phil here wouldn't stop for tea with me at the inn afterwards. It's not far, you know.
We're expected at home, sir. Perhaps you could come along with us. What do you do, sir?
Why, I'm a writer, Phil.
Oh, you really must come to see us. It's Gables on Devon Road, my brother-in-law's place. The name's Rattery. We'll give you a ring tomorrow and set a date. Sis will love meeting a real author, and so will George.
Did you say your brother-in-law's name is George? July 16th. I've met him. I've spent an evening talking to him. George Rattery.
So you're a friend of Lena's, eh? Storybook detective. A writer. Easy enough to write about a dead body. But I'd like to see an author that guts enough to look at one.
I had been more than a little afraid that George might turn out to be a sympathetic character. That need not concern me any longer. I shall have no compunction at all about putting his light out. It appears that George is the half-owner of a garage down in town. A man by the name of Carfax is the other partner. A garage. That would explain how the damaged fender got itself fixed without the police knowing. Oh, how can a beast like George have a fine young son like Phil? This afternoon, I was rounding the corner of the tea house in the Rattery's garden when I heard voices. It was Lena and George. I stopped in my tracks and eavesdropped shamelessly.
It's a neat rig you're wearing today, Lena. Is that for Felix Lane's benefit?
Oh, save your compliments for that Carfax woman.
Jealous.
Don't make me laugh. But someday you're going to find out that business partner of yours isn't as mild as he looks. I wonder what he'd say if he knew that his wife was...
Shut up, will you? And since when did you get so high and mighty? It wasn't so long ago that you yourself were glad enough to...
If you ever open your mouth about any of that, I swear I'll kill you.
Talking big now, aren't we, Miss Snow White?
Just try something and you'll find out. Remember, there are quite a few people who might like to know about that poor kid you ran down last June. If it weren't for Violet and Phil, I'd...
Stop that kind of talk. You hear? Just remember you were with me that night.
Huh? August 5th. Had a look around the Rattray Carfax garage this afternoon. Told George it might come in useful as material in my book. All at once I heard a shot, and there stood George blazing away over the plot in back with a rifle. I went up to him.
There. That's another one of the pests out of the way. We've tried everything. Traps, poisons, rat hunts. We can't keep them down.
That's a nice rifle.
Yeah. Gave it to Phil when he came back from school in Switzerland. Much too good for him. Here, like to have a go at him?
I raised the rifle and sighted. George's back was to me. By shifting a few inches to the right, the bullet should enter the base of the brain. Who could prove that George hadn't suddenly stepped in my way? My finger tightened on the trigger.
I say, George, I can't find that new tin of rat poison. Phil was spreading some out in the dump yesterday. I wonder where he put it.
Oh, hello there, Lane.
Hello, Carfax.
Hey, watch out where you're pointing that gun. We wouldn't want anything to happen to the senior partner, eh?
Not very funny.
All right, that's the first portion of a suspenseful suspense story called The Beast Must Die, starring Herbert Marshall from 1944. All right, Lisa Wolf, 12:35 on a Monday morning. So glad to be presenting these wonderful classic radio shows from the golden age of radio here every Saturday and Sunday night on the WGN Radio Theater. If you want to hear a certain show, just go to our Facebook page. You're saying,
oh,
what is this
God,
from,
that
right?
Is so weirdly familiar. It's from a movie.
Yep, it is.
It's a movie, and I know that movie, and it's a comedy, and I can't place it.
Do you know what it is, Elif?
What is
okay,
it?
Okay, now the name escapes me, but
oh,
it's
no.
The one with Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, you mean like when
The Parent Trap.
The Parent Trap with the two girls. Yes, that's it. They're not two girls. They're both Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah.
That's it. I love that movie. It's a Disney movie.
Really? Yeah, Dennis Quaid's in that.
Yeah. I remember seeing
that.
It's
a
great movie.
It's a feel-good movie.
I still like that
movie. I remember
that movie.
My
That's
daughter.
When she was young and cute and sweet and innocent.
My daughter Amanda loved that movie. She would watch it all the time.
We had that movie on like a VHS or something, right?
Well, just I want to remind our listeners, if there's any classic radio shows you want us to play, just go to our Facebook page, which is WGN Radio Theater, and just post to us. Tell us what you want to hear.
Or, you know, we always have the text line, 312-981-7200. We love to see your texts, most of them.
Text us, I'm kidding. Okay, it's time for the conclusion to The Beast Must Die, starring Herbert Marshall in suspense.
I am now a guest in the house of the man I am going to kill. Violet, Phil's mother, suggested that I come and stay with him for a fortnight and help Phil in odd hours with his Latin. George, much to my surprise, joined in heartily with the idea. I wonder why. I must watch him very closely because of what happened last night. We were having coffee in the drawing room after dinner when the conversation took a most extraordinary turn. They were talking about Violet's new rose bushes.
I suppose they'll be very nice, but I can't for the life of me see why you went to all that trouble.
Well, the old ones weren't doing very well.
They were still alive, weren't they, Mother?
Oh, yes, dear, but I'm not one to keep something going when it's only half alive.
Oh, I'm glad you're talking about rose bushes. I should hate to think you felt that way about people.
Of course not. But, on the other hand, I do think if a person were incurably ill that they ought to... Well, that is, they... ought to have the right to ask their doctor to put them out of their misery. Don't you think so, Felix? Speaking of doctors reminds me, George, don't forget your tonic. Doctor said after every meal.
Tonic. Oh, pass it here. Yeah. Foul stuff. Bitter as gall. Poison.
That won't kill you, George.
Felix, would you really be in favor of doing away with all unfortunates?
Well, what about your incurable social pest, the person who makes life miserable for everyone else around him? I think a person would be justified in killing someone like that.
I do think you're all getting a little morbid.
The kind of a person I describe has no right to life. Of course, that's to say I would if I could do it without running my neck into a noose. Now, in my book, I'm working on a very pretty murder. Quite my masterpiece, I think.
Well, he's darn close about it. Locked doors, sealed lips and all that. Of course, he says he's writing a thriller. But we've no proof, have we? I think you ought to show us the manuscript, Felix. Don't you, Lena?
I can't. I'm sorry. I hate anyone to see an unfinished manuscript of mine. I'm funny that way.
Oh, Felix, please, get it and read some of it. Come on, don't be a spoilsport.
I'll go and get it myself and read it out loud if the blushing author is too coy. By heaven, I'll go upstairs and fetch it now.
You'll do nothing of the sort.
I'll read it.
I will not have people snooping about among my manuscripts. I was close. After all, there is no book but this diary. I must keep it well hidden in my room. At last, I have my plan. It took a great deal of subtle taunting and persuasion, but it came off at last. George is going sailing with me this afternoon, and he can't swim. Drowning is very painful, they say, in the early stages. That's good, I'm glad. George's lungs bursting, the top of his head shrieking with pain, his hands scrabbling vainly to thrust against the giant weight of the water. But if I cannot kill George today on the open sea, with the wind in my favor and myself the undisputed master of the situation, if I fail today, then I will know that it is not my destiny to be a murderer, and I will make no further attempt on the life of George Rattray. And that, Inspector Blunt, is the last entry in my diary.
But you and George did go sailing, didn't you?
Yes, it was after lunch on the same day. We walked down to the docks together. George, as you can imagine, was rather clumsy about a boat, but it was only a few minutes after he clambered aboard that we were out in the main water, sailing free. George had his feet braced against the centerboard case and his hands gripped the gunwale. The squall was coming up.
It's getting pretty close, isn't it?
There'll be plenty of room, George. Power vessels have to give way to sailing vessels, you know.
Give way? How do you think about that size is going to give way to a crate like this? Hey there, what are you up to? Look out, I tell you. You can't. What if you run into us? I'll probably want to hang on to your leg and we're both drowned. What are you doing? What?
A bit close, but perfectly safe.
Oh. Perfectly safe. That barge didn't miss us by a yard.
Ah, the same thing happened the other day when I was out with Phil. He didn't lose his nerve.
Oh, he didn't, eh?
By the way, you better not stand up in the boat again. That's one thing that's not safe.
Very well, my friend. But I shouldn't try any of those funny tricks you've been planning.
Tricks? What tricks?
You know what I mean, you filthy sneak. I searched your room just before lunch, and I found your diary. Yes, I posted that precious diary of yours up to my solicitor just before I came out here. Posted it, mind you, just before we went sailing. So you see, it'll be most unfortunate for you if you let me drown. Well, what's the matter? Lost your lying tongue, have you? I ought to break your jaw for you. I've a good mind to hand over your diary to the police.
Don't be silly. You know perfectly well you won't do anything of the kind. And for the very good reason that you don't want the police to haul you in on a charge of manslaughter for killing my son.
Well, you can't prove I ran over your son.
Aren't you forgetting that Lena was with you that night? The police will get a confession out of her in no time.
Why, you, if ever I see you again after today, you slug, I'll bash you into a jelly.
Shut up, George. I guess we've both been a little too clever. It looks like a stalemate. I docked the boat and George stormed off the minute we landed. I came straight here to the inn.
Yes, I know.
Perhaps it's just as well I didn't succeed. Going back to writing detective stories after committing the perfect crime would be like going back to playing with tin soldiers after winning the Battle of Waterloo.
You seem to be awfully sure of your alibi.
Well, after all, there's no crime in planning a murder, is there? Providing nobody's hurt?
Unfortunately, somebody has been hurt.
What do you mean? What are you trying to tell me?
George Rattray died yesterday evening of the effects of strychnine poisoning.
George dead. Strychnine poisoning.
All my planning, all my high and tragic purpose, and the beast ends by taking his own life. Poison. I remember now, used to talk about suicide quite a lot. But I thought he only did it because the subject was so upsetting to his wife. I never dreamed. How did he take it?
With his tonic. But it couldn't possibly have been suicide, Mr. Lane.
But who? What else could it have been?
It could have been murder. Unfortunately, we have no evidence except this diary of yours.
Oh, but the bottle, to the tonic.
George Rattray died almost instantly after taking his tonic at dinner. But before the doctor arrived, that bottle disappeared.
Well, any suspects?
Every person closely associated with George Rattray had enough motive to murder him. But you had the strongest motive. After all, George Rattray did kill your son.
Am I under arrest?
Not officially as yet. But naturally, I posted a guard outside your room. In the meantime...
But, man, you can't go in there. He told us.
Officer, let me by. I tell you, I've got to see Inspector Blunt. Please, Mother, I say it's no good.
Be quiet, Phil. Why couldn't you have stayed at home? Officer, let me by. I must see.
Now, let them come in, officer. Good afternoon, Mrs. Rattray. Phil.
Hello, Phil.
Hello, Felix. Please. Please, I can't stand it any longer. They're accusing Felix here of murdering my husband. He had nothing
Mother
to do with it.
Said. She doesn't know what she's saying.
For heaven's sake, Phil, will you be quiet? It was I who killed George. He treated me very badly. He was unspeakable to Phil. There was another woman. Oh, I can't go on.
Are you trying to tell me, Mrs. Rattray, that you gave your husband poison?
Yes.
Mother!
I tell you, I poisoned him.
Where did you get the poison, Mrs. Rattray?
I bought it at that chemist shop.
What chemist shop?
The one on Abbey Lane, near the corner of High Towers, that's it.
Uh-huh. Well, what became of the bottle of tonic after your husband's death?
I broke it. I buried it.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Rattray. The police have checked. You didn't buy any poison at the chemist's.
Mother, I told you it was no good. Sir, Mother is trying to save me. It was I, sir. I killed him.
What? Phil, you don't...
Don't believe him. Don't believe him. He's just a foolish child. He doesn't know what he's saying.
Go on, Phil.
Well, you see, sir, I left a note. I was running away, but Mother found the note before I quite got out the door.
Oh, boys get such strange ideas. He couldn't have done it. He's just a boy. You know he couldn't.
You see, sir, when they accused Felix here, I couldn't stand it any longer. That's why I wrote you the note that Mother found at first. She said if she confessed that they wouldn't do much to her, the police would understand. Felix, make them believe me. I can prove I did it.
Now, go on, Phil. You say you can prove it. What do you mean?
I have it here in my pocket, sir. I've had it hid ever since. See, here it is. It's still half full. It's Dad's bottle of tonic.
Phil!
Phil, where did you get that?
I took it off the buffet after the doctor said Dad was dead.
But this is very serious, Phil. You know that.
He's lying. He couldn't have. He's just a little boy.
Please, all of you, I have a favor to ask. Let me talk to Phil alone for a few minutes. Won't hurt anything. I think I may be able to help solve this whole thing. Phil didn't do it. Violet's right.
Yes, but the bottle...
Just give Phil and me 10 minutes alone.
Very well. We'll wait outside. 10 minutes, mind you, Phil. No more.
Come here, Phil.
I'm a murderer, Felix.
You are not a murderer, Phil. No one could ever tell me that.
I left a note.
We've gone all over that.
I killed him. He beat Mother. I killed him, I tell you.
Stop that, Phil. I know better.
They thought you did it, Felix. I heard them talking about your diary. You wanted to kill him. You said so in your diary.
Maybe I did, but...
They'd hang you, Felix.
So that's why you wrote the note and pretended you did it?
Yes, I saw you in the pantry with Dad's bottle of tonic before you went for the sale with him.
You saw me? Oh, I'm sorry, Phil. Sorry you saw me. Naturally, you jumped to the conclusion that I... Oh, poor little man. Well, there's nothing for you to worry about now, Phil.
You mean they're not going to hang you, Felix?
They're not going to hang me.
You won't let them do anything to you? Promise me.
No, I won't let them do anything to me. But, Phil, there are other things for you to think about now. Now that your father's gone, you are head of the house. That's a man's job, Phil. There's a lot you've learned about courage these last few days. Living takes a lot of courage. This is pretty grown-up talk, Phil. Do you understand me?
I'm trying, Felix.
You remind me a lot of my own son.
You mean the boy my father ran?
That's right, Phil. Yes, you're a lot like him.
Would he have gone sailing with us?
Oh, yes. I think Ronnie would have been
quite a sailor.
Can we go sailing tomorrow, Felix?
Not tomorrow, Phil.
Are you going away, Felix?
Yes, but not as far as most people might think.
You sound very strange, Felix.
I have a note to write. I have to make everything shipshape. You go on out to your mother and tell them they may join me in a few minutes.
Can't I wait, Felix?
No, Phil. Go ahead now.
But
those are orders. Skipper's orders.
Aye, aye, sir.
Goodbye, son. I thought I'd made the last entry in this diary, but there will have to be one more. This diary was kept for only one purpose, to make George and the police believe that I had planned to kill the beast by drowning him. Death was already waiting for George Rattray at home in the bottle of his tonic, where I have traced three pellets of rat poison taken by me from the garage. My plan was almost perfect. The only thing I didn't expect was that someone loved me enough to try to destroy the evidence I had so carefully planted in an effort to help me, and even to confess to my crime in order to save my skin. I know now that my life ended with the death of my son, Ronnie. It seems that I must have just come back to life for a few weeks to save Phil. Yes, I killed George Rattray. I have no regrets. I might have known that the matter would be taken care of fittingly. It says in the Bible, the beast must die, but the man dieth also. Yea, they both must die. George was right about that tonic of his. It is very bitter.
And so closes The Beast Must Die, starring Herbert Marshall. Tonight's tale of suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear. Mr. Marshall appeared through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of White Cliffs of Dover. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Mr. Peter Lorre with Richard Conte as stars of Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That was Truman Bradley doing the announcing there for Roma Wines. Lisa had four or five bottles of Roma Wines earlier today.
It's my favorite.
That's why she's got such a smile on her face here. It's heard on CBS. That's The Beast Must Die, starring Herbert Marshall. As heard on Suspense from July 13th, 1944. Also in the cast, Bea Benaderet. Bea Benaderet was on the Flintstones. She played Betty Rubble. She was also on Petticoat Junction. She was the mom on there. And she did a ton of stuff.
I liked Petticoat Junction.
Yeah, that was good. I can't remember the
theme.
Yeah.
Petticoat Junction.
And then Dennis Hoey was the bad guy there, the beast that needed to die. Hans Conried on there, John McIntyre, Joseph Kearns was the man in black. Hope you enjoyed Suspense. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. So, Lisa, what's your favorite holiday?
Well, you asked me on Mother's Day, but I'm a big fan of Halloween.
Me too.
I like Halloween a whole lot.
Elif, what about you?
Christmas.
Okay, Christmas. All right, cool. Well, we're going to do some fun stuff for Halloween and Christmas then. I'm going to figure something out. Well, Lisa's the boss. She decides what we play here.
We've been talking about doing another...
Radio drama? Yeah, but here. I'm talking about scheduling some really cool stuff for this Halloween.
You know, Halloween is a perfect holiday for radio shows. There's a lot of great scary stuff, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, also Christmas. Right, Elif? We'll play some really fun Christmas stories come December.
Yeah,
yes?
I think that's a great idea. Also, another holiday that I really enjoy is my birthday.
Yeah.
It's in a month.
What?
Exactly.
All right, so do you mind telling me? Because
I will definitely get you something
for your birthday.
Yeah, and then you can return and get something really good.
Okay.
June 7th. All right, I'm going to write that down.
I'll put it in my phone.
June
Carl
7th.
Still has like a written calendar.
June 7th. Probably, June 7th, the year 2000?
Yeah, no. How did you know? No. Wow, so accurate. 92.
1992. All right. Let me see here. I'll do the math. I'll figure out the math a little later.
You'll be 24.
Yes.
24. Wow. That's a big birthday. Mm-hmm. I can't wait till I turn 24.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
You'll
catch up to me.
Yeah, I'm going to. Well, I have one more year, and then I can drink Roma wines.
Well,
like
maybe
you
didn't know, Elif, because you're new to our team, but we do celebrate birthdays here at WGN Radio
Good, I'm
Theater.
Excited then. Yeah.
So Carl usually brings a small little, you know, he'll head over to Walmart and find a little something in the candy aisle for
Walmart.
You.
Aww, that's sweet.
No, we'll figure something out fun for you. You just got to give me the brands you like, right? As long as they sell it at Kohl's, it'll be good, right?
That's okay, not nice.
Yeah. Well, you know, Tiffany's came out with a brand of chocolate.
Chocolate? Go with the jewelry. Why
I'm just kidding.
I think Elif's a milk chocolate and not dark chocolate.
Oh,
are you
no.
milk
you
chocolate?
You are absolutely
I think we
correct.
Talked about this once. Elif okay. and I are the same. We like the milk chocolate.
I am different. I go with the dark chocolate. The darker, the better.
Well, speaking of food, I'll tell you what. We have to just plug our sponsor, Mies Meals, because Mies Meals has a terrific offer. Talk about Christmas. It's like and birthday present. It's like a birthday present to everyone listening.
Elif, I think that's what we're going to get you for your birthday. A free dinner for two delivered to your door.
Is it returnable?
It is not.
No.
But you'll love it.
You'll want to eat it. I guarantee you.
All right.
So,
I'm sure I will.
So this is a special that Mies Meals, our sponsor, is having for all of our listeners. And we want all of our listeners to take advantage of it. So so listen carefully because it's quite a great offer. It's dinner for two, and it's free. It's delivered to your home by Mies Meals. Just go to Mies, M-E-E-Z, meals.com, and pick out dinner for two from the wonderful menu that they have. They will deliver the food all chopped up and prepared in a container with ice, and then you just cook it on your stove, and in 20 minutes... 30 minutes maybe, you have an unbelievable dinner for two.
When you order it online, you can put in certain preferences of things you like and things you don't like, and you can also put in preferences as to what time you want it delivered. You don't have to be there. They'll leave it at your door, and it's all insulated, and it stays cold. But if you prefer in the afternoon or the evening, they're very accommodating, and we really hope that you'll try that free dinner for two. It's all of Chicagoland and suburbs.
Right. So
they don't go to Indiana, I've been told. But if you live in the Chicagoland area or the outlying suburbs, we hope that you will try Mies Meals. We are so sure you are going to love it. We want to give it to you for free for the first time.
Right, and you just have to put in the promo code radio.
Yep.
Right, and then you get it free. Any dinner for two delivered to your home, absolutely free. There's absolutely no strings attached.
And we hope you'll let us know about your experience with Mies Meals and what you thought of your dinner.
Yeah, Lisa and I are on. We get Mies Meals every single week. So does Mike. It's fantastic, and you should check it out. But you don't have to. There's no commitment. Just get a free dinner for two.
Yeah,
dinner for two.
That's it.
Delivered to your home. Go to Mies, M-E-E-Z, meals.com and check that out. All right. In our next hour, we're going to tune in to Herbert Marshall starring along with Virginia Bruce in Love Affair, going back to 1943 on the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater. There's our theme song, Lisa. And you're up.
Me?
You're up, too. Wow.
Me? I slept late this morning.
She took a nap.
Good.
She said to me earlier, I took a nap.
I
had my four bottles of Roma wine, and then I took a nap.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah.
I'm on about 4 hours sleep. I
can
no
tell.
Nap today.
You're a little cranky.
Yeah. Are my eyes all, like, sleepy?
No, you're just cranky.
Ah, cranky.
Just a little edgy.
Aye, cranky. I'm cranky. So this is the WGN Radio Theater with cranky Carl Amari and Roma Wine liquored up Lisa Wolf.
Yes, yes, yes.
And potato chip Elif.
Yes, she has a bag of chips.
She got a bag of chips just a little while ago.
All that and a bag of chips.
Yeah, all that and a bag of chips. Were they Frito-Lay? Were they, you can't just eat one?
They're Lay's, right?
No, they were Vitner's.
Vitner's.
I don't think I've ever had them before.
Is it like
this.
The just plain, or are they like a had
special?
The, what are those, like the vinegar ones or something?
Salt and vinegar, that's my favorite. But
do you like that one?
Those are good.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's what we're getting you for your birthday, right there.
Salt
and vinegar chips.
A lifetime supply.
Yeah, Carl's.
Great.
really very generous, you know.
Thanks, Carl.
And you won't have to return that.
I was gonna say.
That's millions and millions right there.
Yeah. Well, you know.
See, Elif, now you understand what I deal with.
Oh, my gosh. All right. We're a little wacky. That's at Roma Wines.
That's what happens on Monday
mornings.
I'll
tell you what. Roma Wines will do that to you. On this hour, we're going to tune in to Herbert Marshall because we're spotlighting Herbert Marshall. He appears on the Screen Guild Theater in Love Affair with Virginia Bruce from 1943. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as Captain Rom in the action adventure The Legend of Tarzan as Tarzan is called back to his former home in the jungle.
All righty. What do they win if they know?
Oh, yes. This is a double prize. We've got a Lou Malnati's gift certificate and a pair of tickets to Nice Work if you can get it.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Now, here's a hint. This actor can be heard here playing Dr. King Schultz in 2012's Django Unchained.
I was under the impression when you granted me an audience, it would be to discuss business.
All right. If you know who that is, give us a call, 312-981-7200. You might win. We'll find our winner after this.
When you granted me an audience, it would be to discuss business.
Hey, Mike. You with us?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Do you know that voice?
Yeah, that is the voice of Christoph Waltz. He also played Colonel Hans Landa in 2008's Inglourious Basterds. Tremendous actor.
Yes, he is tremendous. And it's a voice that's definitely recognizable. Nobody sounds like him, that's for certain, not even Carl. So as good as it is, it's not Christoph Waltz. You are a winner. You have won a double prize tonight. You've won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25, home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza and my personal favorite. You can check them out at loumalnatis.com and a pair of tickets to the Chicago premiere of Nice Work if you can get it, playing right now through June 5th at Theater at the Center. You can check them out at theateratthecenter.com. Hey, Mike, thanks for that. Thank you for calling, and we're so glad that you won the prizes.
Oh, I'm happy too. Thank you so
good.
Much.
Take care.
Thanks, Mike. Okay.
All right, you're welcome.
You're very welcome too. It's 1:12. In the morning, Monday morning. So what are you going to do this week?
Oh, I'm just going to...
Besides not cook food for your children.
I'm just going to sit around and have some grapes and some dark chocolate and just, you know, take a little nap
but
and ride my bike.
You're going to make Mies Meals.
I'm going to make some Mies Meals. I'm going to ride my bike.
Very, very cool. I want to take my bike out too.
Yeah, it's feeling really good.
It's
I hope
time.
It doesn't rain all week.
All right, it's time for a romantic kind of shipboard romantic... radio play now with Herbert Marshall along with Virginia Bruce. We're going back to a broadcast date of 1943. Screen Guild Theater had leading Hollywood stars, Lisa, performing in radio adaptations of their popular motion pictures. And it debuted in 1939, ran until 1952. It had many different titles throughout the run. The Gulf Screen Guild Theater, the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater, the Camel Screen Guild Theater. These were sort of an homage to whoever the sponsor was at the time. Now, this was interesting. The fees that would typically be paid to the actors for appearing were donated to the Motion Picture Relief Fund to help support the creation and maintenance of the motion picture country home for retired actors, which was kind of
nice. Yeah.
And so the actors really didn't make any money, that just the fees were donated to this. And of course, the series, throughout the series, millions and millions of dollars were raised for these kind of retired actors that were in the home.
Right.
And a great cause. And so this was a cool series. This is called the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater. Let's go back to October 11th, 1943 for Love Affair, starring Herbert Marshall.
Gulf Screen Guild Theater. Your host, the director of the Star's own theater, Roger Pryor.
Good evening, everyone. Your neighborhood Good Gulf dealer and the Gulf Oil Companies welcome you to the Gulf Screen Guild Theater. Tonight, the Gulf Theater brings you two more outstanding motion picture stars, Madeline Carroll and Melvin Douglas, in Leo McCary's beautiful screen story, Love Affair. Ladies and gentlemen, that burst of applause is for Madeline Carroll and Melvin Douglas, who have just made their entrance on our Gulf Theater stage. They take their places at the microphone, and we present Love Affair, adapted by Harry Cronman, and starring Madeline Carroll as Terry McKay and Melvin Douglas as Michael Morney. I'll appear as Kenneth, Terry's fiancé. The music will be by Oscar Bradley's Gulf Orchestra with Frank Tours conducting. And now, Love Affair. Sometimes it's the moon that plays pranks with a girl's heart. Sometimes it's soft music. Yes, and sometimes it's just a little breeze. Take Terry McKay, for example. Everything that happened to her came in on the wind. There she was on the boat from Rio to New York, minding her own business, in her own cabin, as a matter of fact, when a piece of paper came floating in through the open window. Quite naturally, Terry picked it up, discovered it was a cablegram. And quite humanly, she was reading it when a man looked in through the stateroom window.
Huh?
I believe you're reading my cablegram. The wind blew it out of my hand.
Oh, this is addressed to Michael Morney. How do I know it's yours?
Well, I'm Michael Morney.
Don't tell me you're the fella.
Yes.
The international playboy, the curly-headed Casanova that Winchell's always talking about. The one that's going up to New York to marry Lois Clark, who's got $10 million.
11. Now, if you'll hand me my cablegram.
Just a minute. You haven't identified yourself yet. Can you tell me what the message says?
Well,
it's frightfully personal.
Well, it says, remembering a warm, beautiful night, a thunderstorm over Lake Como, and you.
And you. That's you?
Uh-huh.
It was all right, huh?
Uh-huh.
It was nice?
Uh-huh.
Think it'll ever take the place of baseball? Here's your cablegram.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Just a moment.
I beg your pardon, but...
Oh, it's you. What's the matter? Did you lose it again?
Look, I'm in trouble. Serious trouble.
Well, I could have told you, playing around Lake Como, the poor girl.
No, listen, I must talk to someone. And you have an honest face. I'm sure I can trust you. We could go to my cabin. It's very close.
Mine's closer. In fact, it's right here.
Oh, thank you. Oh, this is very cozy.
Not that I'm prudish. It's just that Mother told me never to enter a man's room in months ending in R.
Your mother must have been very beautiful. What's your name?
Terry McKay. Terry McKay, and I'm traveling alone.
Well, you saved my life, you know. I was bored to death. I haven't seen one attractive girl on this boat since we left. Not one. Honestly, I was scared. I said to myself, don't beautiful women travel anymore? And then I saw you, and it was all right.
My, my. And with a line like that, you won Lois Clark and $10 million.
11. You know, we still have 8 days before we get to New York. 8 days for life to be bright and lovely. Beautiful and bubbly, like pink champagne. Is there any reason why it shouldn't be?
None at all. Except that I'm engaged.
Oh. Is that his picture on the dresser?
Yes, that's Kenneth.
He's nice, hmm?
Uh-huh.
He's all right.
Uh-huh.
But he wouldn't approve of pink champagne. No. I suppose if I asked you to have dinner with me, you'd say no.
If I said yes?
Oh, then I'd ask you again tomorrow night. And the night after that. And every night until we reach New York. It's lovely on deck at night, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Michael, how many times have we had dinner together?
Oh, twice, three times. Why? Don't you like it?
I know just how a goldfish feels. It's your reputation, I guess. Have you noticed them, the way they stared at
us? Oh, they don't matter. Let's not even talk about them. Let's talk some more about you. Let me see, where were we? You'd left Kansas and you'd gone to New York, and then?
And then a job, singing in a nightclub till 3 every morning. Then the
manager used to chase me around his office till about four. Then I went home. And one night, Kenneth came along.
Oh, yeah.
He said I didn't belong in a place like that. He said...
That you should improve yourself.
Yeah. So I studied and traveled.
So that someday you'd be a charming, lovely wife.
Exactly. Well, I sort of brings us up to date. I've only known you a couple of days, and my whole life's an open book. Now, what about you?
Oh, nothing much. I play the piano, and I write a little. Corbet, you know, the art dealer in New York. Corbet tells me I paint rather well.
A jack of all talents.
Yes, that's trouble. I'm also a critic. The artist in me would create. The critic destroys. So I do nothing.
What a pity.
Besides, I've been too busy living.
I can imagine. Michael, when do we get to Havana?
Tomorrow morning.
We stop there, don't we?
Mm-hmm. 24 hours.
Then I'm going to do a little living, too. Sloppy Joe's and the Rumba places and the big hotels.
And we'll have pink champagne in every one of them. Funny how much colder it is. Almost too cold to stay on deck.
I haven't noticed. This shawl you got me in Havana keeps me warm. Dreaming?
No, just looking at you. That shawl around your shoulders. The moonlight on your hair. It's a picture I don't want to forget. Terry, do you believe if you wish long enough in your mind, and strong enough in your heart,
you get what you want for Christmas?
Yes. We'll get in the morning. Will Kenneth be waiting?
Uh-huh. I got a radiogram. How about your heiress?
Yes, you'll be there too, I guess. We have something on our minds. We better tell it now.
Yes.
You know, I've never worked in all my life. Not once.
I've been thinking about that. What did you say?
I didn't say anything.
You did, too. You said I was very fond of expensive things. Furs and jewels and things.
Did I say that?
I guess we've both been used to a life of pink champagne. It might be difficult to... Do you like beer?
Why, yes, I do.
I know. My father used to say, it's funny how the things you like best are either illegal, immoral, or fattening.
I wonder what your father would think of me. Never working.
Well, just because you haven't.
No, it doesn't mean I couldn't. No, of course not, but I might not find out all at once. It might take me at least 6 months to find out if I could.
What?
I mean, after all, it's unfair to ask you to take a chance.
What are you trying to say, Michael?
I'm trying to say it would take me 6 months to find out if I'm worthy to say what's in my heart.
I was hoping you'd say that. If everything goes all right for both of us, 6 months. That'll be July.
July, yes.
Michael, have you got a pencil?
Yes.
Then write this down. Write it carefully so there won't be any mistake. Darling.
Darling? Is that for me?
Uh-huh. Darling, July 1st, 5 o'clock, 102nd floor, top of the Empire State Building. It's the tallest building in the world, Michael. You can't miss it. The nearest thing to heaven in New York.
Terry.
No, Michael, please. Please don't kiss me now. We've both got a lot to do in the next 6 months. It'll be a long, hard climb to the top of the Empire State. Let's wait till we get there.
February.
I'm the most generous person I've ever known, Kenneth. I'm sorry to have hurt you.
But, Terry, you can't be in love with this Michael Mornay. He's notorious. How do you know he isn't making a fool of you?
I only know I'm to meet him on top of the Empire State Building at 5 o'clock July 1st.
Well, all right, but while you're going through this six-month period of insanity, would you let me take care of you?
No, I've got a job on my own. Find myself, just as he's doing.
Oh, Terry, can't you see I'm in love?
Yes, Kenneth, but so am I.
March.
Greetings from Gotham. What has become of the dashing Michael Mornay? Why, shortly after his arrival from Rio, was the engagement between him and Lois Clark, heiress to the Clark Million, suddenly terminated. Numerous rumors have reached your correspondent's desk, but all of them, when run to earth, have proven...
April.
You're the only nightclub in town that's doubled its business in the last month. Can't be your dinners. It must be Terry McKay's singing.
Yeah, I sure wish I had a name and a long-term contract. The one I got expires at midnight, June 30th.
May.
Come on, Corvée. Don't be afraid of my feelings. Out with it. Is my picture good or bad?
It is good, Michael. Keep on working, and perhaps one day I will say this is a great picture by the great Michael Monet. This is the beginning. This is the one.
June.
He loves blue.
I'd like to see some wedding rings.
June 20th, 10 days.
The 25th.
The 30th.
This afternoon.
The Empire State Building, 5 o'clock. I'll be there, darling, I'll be there. You know what time it is?
2 minutes to five, ma'am.
I'm late.
That's the Empire State across the way, ma'am. I'll just pull across the street.
No, I think I'll save time if I get out here.
Cutting across traffic like this, you sure must be in a hurry.
I am. I'm going to be married.
Say, that's swell. Good luck.
Thank you.
Look out, lady. God in heaven.
Last stop, 102nd floor, observation balcony. This car going down.
Say, son, what time have you got?
9 o'clock on the nose. Say, you've been up here over 4 hours, haven't you?
Yes, I'm waiting for someone.
Stand up, huh? That's tough. It's starting to rain, too. Well, that's the way it goes. Express car at the main floor, going down. Going down, mister?
Yes. I think I am.
All right, that's the first portion of Love Affair on the Screen Guild Theater, a broadcast date of January 5th, 1941. Now, this is not the same one that we've been talking about playing. Love Affair was done several times on the Screen Guild Theater, and Mike, our engineer, took the wrong show. He picked the wrong show. We had a broadcast date of 1943 with Herbert Marshall, but he picked a show from a couple of years earlier where they did this same title, Love Affair. So there was a little mix-up. So on this program, we're listening to Madeline Carroll and Melvin Douglas, not Herbert Marshall, as the star of Love Affair. So hope you're enjoying it. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm formulating what we're going to do for Halloween and Christmas this year.
And Ella's birthday.
Well, Ella's birthday, she's going to get milk chocolate, flowers, and some kind of a dress or something.
Oh, gosh, that's scary, right?
Do you know where I like to shop, though?
Forever 21.
Oh. Sure.
How about
Abercrombie?
You can't return there.
How about Limited 2?
No. What is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Limited 2. Abercrombie Kids
Abercrombie
is fine.
Kids. No, just kidding, yeah. No, what's your favorite store that you shop at?
I really like Topshop.
Topshop? I never heard of that.
I'm on it.
Zara also.
I'm on it.
Topshop?
There's a Topshop at Nordstrom, which is my
and
favorite
Zara.
Store. So.
Yeah, Zara is my favorite.
Never heard of it.
Topshop is my second
Top
favorite.
Topshop is good.
Madewell is another one I like.
I'm guessing they don't have men's clothing there, so this is why I don't know these places.
At Zara they do.
Zara?
Mm-hmm.
Zara.
I think there's one at Old Orchard.
And there's one right down the street.
Oh,
here
there
too.
You have it, Carl.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like 3 blocks away.
Oh, perfect.
On Michigan.
So on June 6th. I'll
you don't
be
have
there.
To.
Oh yeah, no.
Oh yeah, he does.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Now
definitely.
He said it on the air. He's
no
got
doubt.
To.
Oh yeah, oh, you're gosh. Our producer. I got to get you a birthday present.
He's got to get at least.
I'm not that cheap.
At least a pair of socks or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when are your birthdays?
My birthday is every other year, and I'll be 53 this year.
In
August.
Bless you.
Gosh, 53,
Thank you.
And Lisa's gonna be 20. What?
Same as Ella. We're both 24 this year. Yeah. Well, my birthday is in October.
Well, the two of you put together, I'm still older than the both of you.
Right. We're going to keep it that way.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to your birthday. I'll have some milk chocolate with you.
Thank you.
I'll get some good. There's Anna Shea. There's Anna Shea is right in the Arboretum right by where I live. I'll go in there and I'll get you some wonderful milk chocolate.
I'm excited. Sound good?
And then for Halloween, we're going to play some great Halloween shows and Christmas, some great Christmas shows. Kind of thinking we'll try something a little different this year. It'll be fun.
You like to mix it up a little bit?
Yeah, mix there it up. All right, so we're tuning in to the Screen Guild Theater from a broadcast date way back in 1941, January 5th to be exact. Madeline Carroll, Melvin Douglas, starring in Love Affair. Here's the conclusion.
And now back to Terry and Michael and Kenneth and the poignant story of Love Affair. Several months have passed. Michael, not knowing of Terry's accident, was hurt and completely disillusioned when she didn't keep their appointment. A short time later, he sailed for Havana. As our story resumes, Terry is out of the hospital, but still far from recovered, still unable to walk. On a chilly autumn afternoon, we find her bundled up in her wheelchair and sitting in the window of her poorly furnished room.
And thank you so much for the flowers and the book.
Oh, they're nothing. Terry, please, won't you listen to reason and let me do what I want to do for you?
Oh, Kenneth, thank you.
But it isn't right for you to have to live in an out-of-the-way place like this.
It's the best I can afford.
But I've plenty of money. Won't you let me lend you enough so that you can move to a better neighborhood?
That's very sweet of you, but I couldn't let you. You've done too much for me already.
All right, we won't talk about it anymore. But if the time ever comes when you want to change your mind, well, all you have to do is yell.
I will.
Oh, I saw a mention of Michael Morney in the paper the other day. He's still in Havana.
Yes, I read it too.
Look, I want you to be happy more than anything else in the world. Will you let me cable him?
Not unless I can walk to him. And when I say walk, Ken, I mean run. I just can't see myself going down the aisle a piggyback bride, wagging my veil behind me.
Terry, I talked to the doctor this morning.
What did he say?
Well...
Don't lie to me, Ken. Will I ever walk again?
He said if you're a very, very good girl and you keep on improving, he'll make another examination right after Christmas and there might be a chance.
Christmas?
Oh, I know that's a long time.
Quite no time at all. Honestly, the way I feel, it's practically Christmas already.
Michael, Michael, you look wonderful. But what brings you back to New York?
It's Christmas Eve, Corbett. I couldn't stand a Christmas without snow. Did you get those canvases I shipped you?
Are you blind, Michael? They're cluttering up my whole place. You didn't waste these 6 months in Havana.
You should see how many I threw over the cliff.
And I can read what was in your mind when you painted every one of these. This one. You were very sorry for yourself when you painted this.
Yeah, that's right. That was painted in August.
And this one. So violent. You were angry here. You are getting over your broken heart.
No. No, I didn't get over it, Kobe. But I had to learn to live with it.
Yeah. But that other one, the girl with the lace shawl, there you became a painter.
Yes, I'm not exactly ashamed of that one myself.
And the effect you got with the moonlight on her hair. Oh, dear, where did you find a model like that?
I didn't use a model.
I didn't need one.
I had a lot to say. I tried to paint it instead.
So. Yes, it comes through that way on the canvas, Michael. You know, there was a girl in here the other day. She saw it in the window. She said he spoke to her many things, beautiful things. She wanted it.
I'm sorry, that's one I don't expect to sell.
She couldn't afford it anyway.
Why, is she poor?
Yes, and besides, she was in a wheelchair. Her legs, I think.
Oh. She liked it, huh?
That painting she loved. It's too bad, of course, but I have her address just in case.
Oh, stop hinting, you old buzzard. But you can send it to her.
I already have.
Why, you old...
You're not angry.
Oh,
No, no, of course not. Tomorrow's Christmas, Corbett.
You're a good boy, Michael. And being away alone has helped you. Only you mustn't stay away too long. In New York, they forget you like that. You turn around once and poof, even your name is gone from the telephone book.
Oh, nonsense. No one even knew I was gone. I'll bet my name's still in the directory. Oh, wait, here's a book. Let's see if it is.
I was just making a joke.
Oh, no, no, I'm curious now. Let's see. K-L-M. Here we are. Mornay ought to be right near the top. McAdams, McBride. Why did they always put the MCs first? McFarlane, McGowan, Mac...
What is it, Michael? Have you seen a ghost?
McKay. Terry McKay.
You sure you'll be all right, Miss McKay?
Perfectly all right. You know, Mrs. O'Reilly, you're the first landlady I ever had for a mother.
Oh, go on, dear. Is the couch comfortable?
Soft as your heart.
And the lap robe warm enough? Mm,
just right.
Then I'll be up in a little while to help you to bed.
Thank you.
And if you'll be wanting anything before then, just rap on the floor.
I will.
Excuse me, I'm looking for Miss McKay.
It's the door right there on the left, sir.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Come in.
Good evening.
Michael.
Hello, Terry.
Michael, it's good to see you.
It's good to see you, too. Are you feeling all right?
Oh, yes, I'm just resting.
Good.
It's been a long time.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
It's good to see you.
Yes, you said that. May I?
Yes, please. Sit down, Michael.
Thank you. I'll bet you're wondering how I got here.
Mm.
Well, I was looking in the telephone book for a man named McBride. I saw the name Terry McKay. So I said to myself, could that be Terry McKay, my old friend?
And it was.
Yes. Then I said to myself, I hadn't been very nice to Miss McKay. After all, I had an appointment with her one day. But I didn't keep it.
You did.
So I said to myself, I must apologize. And here I am.
That's sweet of you. I
thought so.
I've often wondered about you.
You did, really? And you weren't angry because I wasn't there? Well, you must have been at first.
Well, yes, I was. First, I was furious. I said, he can't do this to me. Who does he think he is?
And then...
Then I really got mad. You can just imagine standing up there.
Yes. In the rain.
Yes.
And then what did you say to yourself?
Then I said, why don't you go home and get tight?
Oh, but you didn't do that.
Didn't I?
No. Well, maybe you took a little one. Every hour for about a month.
Can you blame me?
No, I should say not. The least I could have done was send you a note.
Maybe by the time you thought of it, you didn't know where to reach me.
But you swore that if you ever saw me again, you'd ask, didn't you?
No. No, I remembered we said if we could make it, we'd be there. And if one of us didn't show up, there must have been a darn good reason.
Yes, but...
And no questions asked.
Hmm. You know, it's funny. I walked all the way up here. 2 miles through the snow. Just to wring your beautiful neck. Instead, I can't even ask you why you weren't there. You knew that's why I came.
Yes.
It doesn't seem...
I know.
I don't know what happens to me when I see you again. When I hold your hand. Oh. No wedding ring.
No.
Oh. I thought that maybe...
No. Ken and I are just good friends.
I didn't mean to offend you.
You haven't, Michael. And how is everything with you?
Oh, you can ask questions.
Uh-huh.
Well, I thought everything was fine until I saw you. Now I don't know. I'm worried about the future. What will people think of me? They'll say,
There goes Mornay, the mad painter. There's something the matter with him. He doesn't like women.
He won't even speak to him.
Oh, yes. He sails the seven seas, and to every woman he meets, he says, "Where will you be in 6 months?"
And they're there?
Yes, everywhere. Tall buildings, pyramids, everywhere. Waiting, waiting, waiting.
And where is he?
Waiting. You want me to change the subject?
Please.
You're wearing my shawl. I remember you wore it that last night on the boat. I painted you like that. With that shawl. I wish you'd seen it. Courbet said it was my best. It doesn't matter. It's gone now.
Gone?
Yes, a girl came into Courbet's shop. She saw in the painting what I'd hoped you might see. So I told Courbet to give it to her.
Did you?
Yes. Oh, she was very poor, you see. So I said, send it to her, Courbet. Tomorrow's Christmas. Just like that.
You're very generous, Michael.
Well, after all, she liked it so much. She couldn't afford it. Besides, Courbet said she was in a wheelchair, that she couldn't... That she couldn't...
What is, Michael? What are you staring at?
At that robe around your knees. Aren't you too warm?
No. No, I'm quite comfortable. It was cold in here.
And you haven't been very hospitable, Terry. Move from that couch. You might have shown me around your apartment.
Yes, I know, Michael, but you see...
I'm sure there must be another room, a bedroom, maybe.
Michael, don't go in there!
Why not, dear? I'm such an old friend. Surely you wouldn't want me to leave without...
Michael!
It's there. Terry, why didn't you tell me? Oh, God, if anything had to happen to one of us, why did it have to be you?
Darling, don't look at me like that. Nobody's fault but my own. I was looking up at the 102nd floor, the nearest thing there was to heaven.
Terry. Terry, darling.
Listen. It's 12 o'clock. Christmas morning.
Our Christmas morning. Terry, do you remember what I told you once? If you wish long enough in your mind and strong enough in your heart, you'll get what you want for Christmas.
Yes. And we will, Michael. I know we will. Because if you can paint, I can walk.
Ladies and gentlemen, our stars, Madeline Carroll and Melvin Douglas, are taking a well-deserved bow for their splendid performances. An usher has just this minute handed a beautiful bouquet of roses across the footlights to Madeline, and just look at her smile. You know, both Madeline and Melvin donated their performances this evening, as do all the stars who appear here in the Gulf Theater. And in return, Gulf has contributed generously to the Motion Picture Relief Fund to help the fund build a home. A home to provide for the members of the picture industry who can no longer care for themselves. Next week, the Gulf Theater brings to the air for the first time one of the most stirring motion pictures of the year just passed. The love story that thrilled the nation, Waterloo Bridge. In the leading roles, we're proud to present, co-starred for the first time, Joan Fontaine and Brian Ahern. You saw Brian Ahern as the star of Hired Wife, and you saw Joan Fontaine's great performance in Rebecca. So be sure to listen to these two stars in the Gulf Screen Guild Theater next Sunday night. Brian Ahern and Joan Fontaine in Robert E. Sherwood's Waterloo Bridge. Until then, this is Roger Pryor saying good night, everyone, for your neighborhood Good Gulf Theater.
Technicolor production, Virginia. Melvin Douglas appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. And as Roger said, don't forget to tune in next week at the same time for the Gulfstream Guild Theater production of Waterloo Bridge, starring for the first time together on the air, Brian Ahern and Joan Fontaine. Bud Houston speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's the Lady Esther Screen Guild player, and that is from January 5th, 1941, Love Affair with Madeline Carroll and Melvin Douglas. Also, Roger Pryor on that is heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed Love Affair. A good kind of a romantic story, Lisa. We play romantic stories, too. Just because I don't have a romantic bone in my body doesn't mean that I won't play a romantic story every once in a while.
We had a listener that texted in that she said, thanks a lot, Carl. She had to open a new box of tissues for that one.
Well,
so,
see, Kleenex will send me a royalty check for that.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, it would be. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. So next week, we're going to come back here on Saturday and Sunday night. We'll be here from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. both of those nights, and we're going to have more spotlights on special big stars of the golden age of movie and TV and radio. And next week, we have two big stars, Jimmy Stewart, Lisa, and we're going to listen to Jimmy in The Six Shooter, which is his radio series, also Suspense. And then on the Screen Directors Playhouse, I think we're playing Call Northside 777, which was a very popular movie that he starred in. And then on Sunday night, William Bendix. He, of course, was Chester A. Riley on The Life of Riley. So we have a Life of Riley radio show for you. Then you'll hear him on Suspense. And then as a special guest on The Burns and Allen Show. That's all next week when Lisa and I will be right back here at Radio 720 WGN to play more of your favorite classic radio shows on the WGN Radio Theater. Did I forget anything?
No, I think we'll be counting down the hours. It's we figured that out once, didn't we? How many hours from
lot
now
of hours.
Until then?
Yeah.
I think Elif knows right
yeah.
now. From now until Saturday at 11.
Yeah, we'll have one of our listeners will send that in. We have a lot of mathematicians listening
yeah,
to the show.
We do have a few. Well, yeah. We're going to put you on that job.
All right, so that's okay. Next week. But coming up tonight, we have Nick DiGilio, and he is live in studio right here with
hey.
Us with a Cub hat on.
How you doing?
Yeah, Cubs won again.
Took them 5 hours.
Yeah, 5 hours, right?
Yep.
But they won in the 13th inning.
Yep. This team is just incredible.
They find ways to win. There's no doubt.
Incredible.
Yeah. My brother, who is the world's biggest Cubs fan, he is just, floating. He doesn't even touch the ground.
Oh, it's nuts. It's 24-6.
Floating.
I don't even know what to say
at
this point.
It's the best record in baseball, right?
Oh, yeah, by far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sox are doing well, too.
I guess.
You know, but I don't watch the Sox. I'm sorry. I'm a Cub fan. But wouldn't that be great if we had a World Series of Sox and Cubs? I think it'd be cool.
Yeah. I'd rather it not be the Sox, but
with
yeah.
reservation.
Yeah.
So, my friend, what's on the show this morning?
Well, we got Colin and Eric movie reviews. The big one that came out this week is Captain America: Civil War.
Ah,
kind of the only one that came out this week.
Yeah.
So that we're going to talk about.
Did
that.
Did you see it?
Yes, I did.
And
it's great.
Yeah, I hear it's really,
it's
really
very,
good.
Very entertaining.
Looking forward to it.
Very entertaining. And we will also talk about yesterday was Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be talking about most memorable TV and movie moms.
Hmm.
And since the Captain America movie came out, we're also going to jump off on some great superhero stories.
Yeah. So in that movie moms, and we won't give anything away, but I'm trying to think. Holly Hunter. And Nicolas Cage.
Oh, in Raising Arizona.
Because she's kind of a mom in that. I mean, she's...
Well, they steal a baby.
They steal a baby.
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
It's a great movie. I thought you were going to go
Arizona.
With... I thought you were going to go... When you said Holly Hunter, I thought you were going to go with the HBO movie that she did where she played the Texas cheerleader... The
right.
mother of the Texas cheerleader who he planned to murder the girl that was going to...
Based on a true story.
Absolutely true story.
I forgot about
and
that.
She's... Phenomenal in that
Oh,
movie.
She's a great actress.
Yeah. Holly Hunter's great.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like anything of the Superman Batman movie, so I didn't even like her performance in
that.
Like nobody in that. I mean,
she
like,
got paid.
Did not like that movie at all. Well, but I like Holly Hunter.
Oh, she's one of my favorites.
And in Raising Arizona, just it was on recently, and that's what reminded me. You get me a baby, huh?
Yeah.
You just go in there and get me a baby.
Yep.
If you haven't seen Ellis looking at us like, you guys are so crazy. Never heard of that movie, Raising Arizona. It was before you were, you might have been.
1987.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't born yet.
You weren't born yet in 1987?
I was born in 1992.
Nick. Oh, Nick. Right? This is, you know, every day I realize how old I'm getting.
No, it's just, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I actively remember getting blank stares from people when I made a reference. I was directing a play called GIs in Europe about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And there were some younger people in the show, and we had a rehearsal, and then afterwards, after the rehearsal, I was giving my notes, and I told one of the guys in the play that, you know, he played a character who, throughout the entire length of the play, drinks continuously.
Right.
And gets drunker and drunker and drunker.
Mm-hmm.
So we rehearsed a scene, and it was a scene that took place relatively early in the play, but he played, when we did the rehearsal, he played it way drunk.
Right.
And so I said, you know, you can't be that drunk because you'll be dead by the end of the play.
Sure.
So I said, don't Foster Brooks it that much.
And he was like, huh?
No, he knew.
Oh, he knew.
Because he was in his late
30s. Did,
And so, like, I got about like, four people just, like, looked at me like, what?